the fuck is that guy?
Two legs, two arms, normal.
There was a bus that pulled up to a red light, and Little Nog tried to feed it a carrot while Big Nog was petting it. He thought it was a horse.
And he threw a big pity party for himself, crying on camera and shit. It's fucking just ridiculous.
Oh no, this guy, look at it, they knocked the bucket over. This is the Three Stooges. What are you freaks doing? Everybody's booing. Now there's even more pressure. Oh, now they're sweeping it out. That's good.
They're selling you all wolf tickets, people. You're eating them right up. George here is selling you wolf tickets. Dana here is selling you wolf tickets. The UFC is selling you some wolf tickets.
You don't forget Jesus, people!
I was just like, I need to have his babies. I need to stay alive.
I have a huge cunt, Joe.
It's too big?
It's too big.
Like, beast in his home.
But, I'm not impressed by your performance.
You're to be talking to when it's sunny.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, at least we're getting a show in, right?
Damn right.
Yeah, the streak continues. There hasn't been a missed week. I mean, it's either been one of us or both of us for a long time here.
Yeah, I don't, I'm guessing a year? Has it been?
I have no idea. I have no idea. But, either way, we're here. We're getting one in this week, so...
That's what she said.
Yeah, at least one anyway, right?
Exactly. So she's got at least three she can take, though.
Wow, quite the lady. Welcome to MMA and stuff on halfguarded.com. My name is Matt. That is Mike. You know the drill. We talk about MMA and stuff on this here print. Let's start by talking a little bit about UFC on Fox from this past weekend. We had Weidman versus Gastelum on July 22nd at Nassau Veterans Memorial Coliseum in, I guess it's Uniondale, technically, Long Island, whatever you want to call that. Attendance was 11,000 with a gate of $1 million. In the main event, Chris Weidman defeated Kelvin Gastelum by submission with an arm triangle at 3:46 of the third round. Big win for Weidman. He had lost three straight going into this. All three of them, he was competitive, but he still had three L's in a row, and he certainly did not want a fourth one. I thought he looked pretty good. He got rocked in the first round at the end of the first, but he really had the edge on Gastelum. Just he was the bigger guy and was able to get takedowns repeatedly and kind of dominate the position on the ground throughout the fight.
Yeah, this was the fight that I would say that it answered questions about really both guys, in that we saw Gastelum fight an elite level middleweight, but there was no real question. I would say there's no real question that he's still pretty damn good. This isn't facing, you know, old man Vitor or, or Kennedy or anybody else who wants to retire or not make weight. You know, Weidman's, you know, legit, and we saw it. You know, we saw that all those previous fights he lost, that they really were kind of, I don't want to say valid excuses behind them, but, you know, he rarely got blown out in those fights. And so he came in there, and yeah, he really, I'm using the word really a lot, he showed that he was just bigger. You know, the technique was there for both guys. I thought Gastelum did fine, all things considered. But Weidman was simply a bigger man, and this is why you have weight classes. And yeah, he got clipped there at the end of the first, and that sucks for him. But otherwise, it was a rout. I mean, he dominated Gastelum pretty much throughout until he got the choke in the third. And his grappling was way better. His striking seemed a little more diverse. Gastelum mostly seemed to load up on that left hand of his, but... I mean, yeah, it was a rout, and it was exactly what Weidman needed. Now he can, he's probably, what, one fight away from an interim title shot.
what do you think is next? Because I guess the big thing looming in the middleweight division now is obviously we got Robert Whittaker as the interim champ right now. With Bisping on the sidelines, it really kind of depends what Bisping wants to do, I guess. Is he going to fight Whittaker next, or is he going to fight GSP? Is he going to fight Weidman? How do you think this whole thing ends up hashing out?
I'm guessing that he fights Whittaker,
Yeah, he would have to. I would think logically he would have to, but I think Whitaker's got some sort of knee issue going on now too. I've read a couple places.
Well, then, what the fuck does that mean? Are we gonna have like another interim champion, or is somebody who's not an interim champion who's gonna fight Bisping, beat Bisping, become the real champion while an interim champion still exists? What a joke. Yeah, I mean, St. Pierre is the only other possibility to me besides Whitaker. I can't, again, setting aside like a last minute injury that screws something up, but otherwise, yeah, this is, that seems the most logical fight to make. And as for Weidman, you just give him any of the other big names he's fought most of them before, but you could do another fight with Rockhold. Romero part two would actually seem to make a lot of sense given where they're each at right now, but obviously Jacare's there, and, who knows? There's probably some other dude coming up real quick. I was going to say Musasi, but he ran away. But somebody else will show up. I mean, fuck, it's an era of Robert Whittaker and Michael Bisping being number one and number two in the middleweight division. And I didn't see that coming at all. So let's go on with life.
Yeah, I know Rockhold is scheduled for a fight with David Branch, I think, next. So maybe Weidman faces the winner of that, but we'll see how it all shakes out. A lot of it's going to depend on GSP and what he ends up doing, because GSP still wants that Bisping fight. He's still saying he wants Bisping. So if Whitaker ends up being injured and can't be out, he's going to get knee surgery and is on the shelf for 6 months. I guess you could go Bisping, GSP, and then the winner of that could face Whitaker, but who knows what GSP will want to do if he beats Bisping. He might just want to move back down to 170 and never fight again at middleweight. It could lead to some messy booking situations, for sure.
I don't even worry about GSP. I don't factor him into this. To me, he's a flake. I don't know if he's even going to fight again. He's, you know, he had a chance, and then, you know, I want to fight, and I'm going to fight then he backs it off, and backs it off, and backs it off. And at this point, I'm sick of it. You had all these years. If you want to fight, dude, fight. Don't say I'm coming back. Now I need to wait another 7 months. Fuck off.
In the semi-main event, Darren Elkins defeated Dennis Bermudez by split decision. It was a close fight. It was competitive. It was one of those situations where I think Bermudez was the cleaner striker, probably better, but Elkins is the type of guy who just wants to win more. I don't really know how to describe this one. It was a toss-up. It was a split decision, 29-28, 28-29, 29-28, one of those deals where it easily could have gone to Bermudez, too.
Yeah, it was a Darren Elkins fight. You know, if he doesn't get blown out real quick or something like that, this is, you know, usually how his fights are going to go. The man fights ugly, and he's willing to fight ugly, and he fought ugly in this fight. That's how he's the only way he's going to get the win, and he did, so good for him. It's featherweight. It doesn't matter. They're not gonna, I mean, maybe Bermudez could have done something. He had kind of a run there, but are we really gonna see Darren Elkins challenging for the title? No.
No, I don't think so, but still probably the biggest win of his career. I know over Dennis Bermudez, that's not huge praise, but Bermudez has been kind of a perennial top 10 guy for a few years now, so a good win for Elkins, and he keeps moving forward. Prior to that, we had Patrick Cummins defeating Jean Volante by split decision as well, 29-28, 28-29, 29-28. So another close fight there. At the end of the fight, if you looked at these two guys, you would have thought Jean Volante had destroyed this man. Cummins' face was a mess. He had a huge mouse under his, I think, his left eye. He looked like he got beat up bad. But he just seemed to have the better gas tank. I felt like as the fight was progressing, his striking was getting not better, but more accurate, more crisp, and Volante was just kind of gassed by the end of it.
Yeah, the fight sucked. Volante clipped him bad early. He had another couple of shots in the fight that, you know, I think that Volante won, like, a fight, a brawl. He definitely seemed to hurt Cummins more, but it was such, like, a... So much inactivity that I can't really rightfully argue against the split decision victory, and I also don't really care to ever think about the fight again.
In the opener of the main card on Fox, we had Jimmy Rivera defeating Thomas Almeida by unanimous decision. And crazy scorecards, like 29-28, 30-26, and 30-27. I didn't score any of the rounds 10-8, so that 30-26 scorecard kind of stands out to me. But Vera looked good against another top bantamweight, so he's got to be almost in the mix there. He was calling for a title shot or a fight with Dominic Cruz afterwards, and I think he's right there at this point.
Yeah, you know, he was surprisingly ranked number 4. I know he had the win over Faber, and I know he's only got one loss in his career. He's a damn good fighter. I didn't see him as number 4 at bantamweight. He came out there, and he really teed off on Almeida. I don't want to say he schooled him, but he definitely seemed to give the Brazilian a lot of trouble, and the power he possesses, it's legit. And not just with his striking, but the way he wrestles, he's explosive as hell. Him and Cruz, I get why he'd want that, and it actually kind of makes sense. I would think, probably more likely is he gets the winner of Aljamain Sterling and Hen Burrell on Saturday. I'd like to see that. That'd be kind of like a nice final step for one of those guys to get into the title shot.
Yeah, because I think Cruz wants to just wait for the winner of Dillashaw and Garbrandt, but the question is, when is that fight going to happen? Because Garbrandt's got the screwed up back, and back injuries are tough, man. You never know how that's going to go or how long you'll be out. I mean, we could have another interim title fight here any day announced.
I'm sure we will. There's no reason not to. It's been way too long.
On the prelims, they were on FS1, couple interesting fights, not big names obviously, but a guy debuting in the UFC, Eric Anders, had a knockout win over Rafael Natal. Alex Cowboy Oliveira defeated Ryan LaFleur by knockout, like vicious uppercut, just knocked LaFleur out. It was the first time LaFleur was ever finished. What else? Anybody else catch your eye on the show?
No, I know I watched those fights. I don't have any recollection of them, really. So that says a lot, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, the Oliveira one stood out to me. He just nailed LaFleur with an uppercut. LaFleur was moving in, and he timed it perfectly, and LaFleur was out cold, and LaFleur's not an easy guy to finish, so a good win for Oliveira. But I think that's about it. Another guy, I think, making his UFC debut at heavyweight, Junior Albini, defeated Timothy Johnson. The big storyline coming out of that fight was Albini's this Brazilian guy who's broke, no money, has this 2-year-old daughter, and she was playing with shampoo bottles prior to this fight. And then a couple days later, pictures came out, and he bought his daughter some toys. So that was kind of the happy feel-good story from the show. He got a performance of the night bonus, so an extra $50,000 on top of, I don't even know what his base pay is.
$40 and a churro.
So $50,000's good.
Yeah. Churro. I know churro isn't really Brazilian. A plantain.
I don't believe so.
A plantain.
I'm not sure that's real Brazilian.
They
either,
have,
but...
there's some sort of like banana-like dish that's native to Brazil.
Okay, no, it could be plantains, but I think more like the islands when I think plantains. But
yeah, well, they're all the same. Are they south of me? Yeah, they're all the same.
Okay, Antarctica too.
Yeah, well, you know, if they have people down there, they probably get suntanned very easily. That yes, ice can really burn you.
It reflects.
Yeah, it's a bitch. So yeah, good for Albini there getting his win. He's a heavyweight, so everyone will immediately think, hey, he could be a challenger. It's gotta be nice to be a big guy. Like you make your UFC debut, if you look good at all, immediately people are like, well, fuck, man, like 2 or 3 more wins, he'll fight for a title.
Yeah, I meant to ask you, Gastelum. Do you think he moves back down to welterweight next, or do you think he stays at middleweight? He says he wants to go back down to welterweight, but you think UFC will allow that and risk it?
I don't. I mean, I know he's wanted to go back down to welterweight this entire time. He's been fighting at 185. They just keep giving him one damn good fight after another to keep him there. I think if it's up to him, he'd go back down if he's the UFC. Let the guy try. Let's face it, what's he going to do, fuck up an undercard? Maybe the main event of some shit show no one cares about? So, yeah, if he wants to have it, I guess you do it. It's his career.
Yeah, do you remember him saying, like, when they wanted him to move up to 185, he would show up at Dana White's doorstep weighing 170 pounds, and he could weigh him at his house.
Yeah.
That was good.
Wonder if he ever tried that.
I don't know, but I just picture that, him trying to show up into that, like, stronghold of mansions Dana's rebuilding in Vegas, tearing the houses down, putting the new ones up, and Gaslam trying to get through the construction workers, all, like, having no water, totally dehydrated. Like, I was picturing him, like, trying to get by, like, forklifts and stuff to get to Dana and get on a scale.
Is that what Dana's doing? He's building a mansion complex?
Yeah, that was one of the weeks you were away. He, I guess he bought one of, like, Lorenzo's old houses in some exclusive, like, golf neighborhood in Vegas. And then he bought the other three houses around it, and they're all, like, $2-3 million homes. And he's basically destroying them all and going to build one mega mansion in this neighborhood. But it's going to be, like, these houses, like, the shittiest of the houses he bought is nicer than any house I've been in. Do you know what I mean? It's, like, that sort of level of money he's got now. So he's basically bought three or four lots all adjacent to one another and is going to build God only knows what on it.
So this is almost like, and I know he's not quite a billionaire, but like the billionaire equivalent of gentrifying those millionaires out of the place. Like, oh, I can't stand these houses. They're only worth $2-3 million. They're such a blight on the community. Let's raise them and put in a shopping mall that will now be my house.
Kinda. I don't know what he's thinking, but I guess he's got, when you get a payday of $300 million just out of the blue, I might try and do something like that just for the hell of it too. What the hell? What else are you going to do with the money, I guess? And then he could probably resell the house to another billionaire for more money in 10 years, you know, and make a profit on it, but.
I guess, I don't know. I guess if he's tearing things down, that kind of makes sense. Otherwise, I can never imagine buying the house that belonged to a friend of mine. Like, I know all houses, for the most part, you're buying someone else's house, but to buy a house that, like, you've been in, you've seen what your friends are doing, I would never feel like it's quite mine. So, I guess you gotta take
it. Well, he bought the original, it might have been Frank, too, I forget which one, because it's crazy, you can see these houses on, like, Zillow and these websites, and there's pictures of the inside and everything, but I think, essentially, he bought it, like, 10 years ago, and probably Frank or Lorenzo gave him a good deal on it. It was like, here, take the house, consider it part of your pay or whatever it might be back in 06 when things first started taking off for him. And probably Dana wasn't making a ton of money, but it looked like things were going to go well. Maybe they just kicked him a good deal on the house. And he basically in the neighborhood still has the house, and this house isn't big enough 10 years later for me. I'm going to buy up the whole neighborhood and start from scratch. Because now he's got Fertitta money. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess. And again, maybe it makes sense to regular, normal people. But to me, like, you buy a house, and that's your house. And right. It should have, like, little marks. Oh, this is where we measured how tall the kids were. And this is where somebody actually put their foot through the door in anger or whatever. Like, your house should reflect you. And I don't know, when you're like, tearing down your house every 5 years, I'm going to put this bigger house in. Like, it's not really a house then. It's just some place you live sometimes. That's just, I don't, and I feel like none of those giant houses, you can never really have any character with them. You have to basically pay somebody to decorate it for you. And you got all these rooms in there. You're like everybody, I don't know, not everybody, but a lot of people kind of grew up with their mom, had like the one room you're not allowed in. They'd have like 50 of them. What's the point?
I don't know.
Fucking rich people.
If you had the money, what would you, you'd have a nicer house if you had money.
Yeah. Like, oh, for sure. Yeah. I'd have a nice house, but I don't know. We all spend money as we earn it, and I guess that's how life is, but I like to hope that I'd be content with just a, you know, 10 or 15,000 square feet. Nothing huge.
Yeah, I'm with you. Speaking of huge things, Mayweather McGregor is still on the horizon. It's not been canceled yet. We still think it's going to happen, Mike?
Yes, there's something else I think is going to fall. Oh, yeah, Jones and Cormier I think is going to fall through. But
yes,
McGregor and Mayweather is going to happen.
Oh, okay, good. You finally crossed that bridge. That's good. Do you know you'll be able to watch it in movie theaters across the country? Fathom Events and Mayweather Productions have collaborated to bring the broadcast to the big screen.
Honestly, I'm going to see how much that costs and if it's nearby me, because more and more I'm like, I can't justify spending $100 fucking bucks on this thing. Like
you don't have a you don't have a friend or somebody who'll split it with you.
I don't have friends, and even if I did, I couldn't ask.
The other option was or somebody. There's nobody.
I can find some bum on the street. Hey, what are you doing over there? Guy picking his ass. You got $20? You want to watch a fight? Come on over. That'd be fun. But
that would be.
I can't pay money for this shit fest, especially given like if it was actually like if they had the MMA fights on the undercard, I'd be like, fine, I'll consider it. But it's gonna be boxing. It's going to be bad, and boxing undercard sucks, and that means everything relies on the greatest of his generation versus the guy who's never fought before. We'll go over it later.
Yeah, so essentially the pay-per-view, if you buy it in HD, is $99.95, which is weird pricing. Why not just make it $99.99 and get the 4 cents from every schmuck out there? Nobody's gonna care. But anyway,
Weird. Like, well, I know that some businesses internally have coding that way. Like, if you go to a certain store, some things would be 99 cents, 95 cents, and then there'll be like a third option, which is like the internal code for this is like on discount. So I guess this is the Mayweather family's internal discount. Show.
I guess. I've just never understood 95 cents. Just make it 99. Nobody's going to, like, if it's something millions of people are going to buy or going to sell a lot of thousands of or whatever, even like if it's a soda at a restaurant, why would you make it $1.95? Why not make it $1.99 and get that 4 cents over and over and over again from every customer? It's just odd because nobody cares.
Yeah.
Like, the customer doesn't care about that 4 cents. It's bizarre.
And I know that there's this psychology behind 99 cents and all that, like, it feels lesser, but on something like Mayweather and McGregor, I feel like spending $100 is part of the experience. Part of what you're doing is everybody's collectively deciding we're going to spend a lot of money and they're going to get paid a lot of money. It's all about the money on this. So I'd rather see $100. They could have that $100 sign that the kids use with their texting, and it'd be $100, and that's how much it would cost, as opposed to $99.95. Like, $99.95 makes you seem like an asshole who's spending a lot of money. $100, like, I'm $100 for this super fight.
Right, it's also just a $100 bill. Who cares, right? But anyway, so you can buy it that way, $100 at home in the comfort of your own house, or you can go to a theater where tickets could still run up to $40 per person.
I'm not doing that then. Fuck that.
The price, it probably, I bet it's more like in Chicago, New York, LA, those areas.
That's
but if you're out, I know, that's what I'm saying. It's probably closer to 40 where you are, but probably less. I don't know, in Little Rock. I don't know.
That's a good choice of small towns that people have heard of.
Oh, thank you.
I like that, yeah.
Yeah, usually I can't think on my feet like that.
A lot of sluts in Little Rock, too.
Huh, yeah. Unaware. Yeah. Interesting.
A lot of whores. it's kind of like how when you go through like West Texas and you see all the old oil rigs, it's just a reminder of days gone by when being a slut was a profitable endeavor in Little Rock.
Now, I don't personally don't have much interest in going and watching it at a movie theater just because I think it would be annoying and I'm a recluse and I'd rather just stay in my own house not necessarily by myself, maybe have a few friends over or whatever, but like driving to the theater, trying to watch it, get a seat, to me, I'd rather just watch it at home. I'd rather spend the extra money and just watch it at home than have to go out and do that sort of thing. Do you think you would enjoy the movie theater experience, or you'd be happier at home?
I've seen UFC once in a theater setting, and ironically, we were in Vegas. It was a Weidman and Silva fight when he knocked him out the first time. That was my bachelor party. And it was cool. I mean, part of, if you're drinking, that's always fun. And that's really the main difference. I mean, there's some fun to be had when you're in a group setting like that. You feel the energy. People kind of lose their mind. Again, you have to mentally prepare yourself, which is sad, especially if you're someone like me, to not be an angry jerk about it, because you're going to deal with morons. That's just, that's the reality of being in public. But, I mean, look, for the most part, I try to avoid, like, sunlight and city streets. I'm not always the best person to ask, but I see the appeal. To me, if it was if it was like 15 or 20 bucks, I'd probably do it, because I know I'm going to spend extra money on food and all that. But if it's 40 bucks, no, I'm a sucker. I'm not that much of a sucker.
Yeah, you'll have to look around and see. Because some places are saying like 20 bucks. So again, I think they're just going to charge whatever they can get for this.
I'm still not going to do it even if it's 20 bucks, if we're being honest. Okay. I'm just going to find a stream and do it illegally.
Oh, good.
I know.
Okay.
There's going to be a lot of them. If there's good streams for like Liverpool games and they're playing some low-level team and I'm meaning this game on a Wednesday, there'll be one for the biggest fight of all time.
It's amazing they can't figure out a way to stop that better, isn't it? Because it just seems like they got to lose so much money that way. Because as time goes, don't you think as time goes on, though, more and more people are going to be aware of streaming and just find streams online? It's just going to become more and more common.
I think it's kind of one of those chicken and egg deals where a stream only hurts them if it's so big, but if it's big enough to hurt them, it's big enough for them to see. And so it's like, you know, nobody notices if you take a penny from the take a penny thing. It's only when you steal a loaf of bread. And, you know, when these things get big enough, you see that with all the BitTorrent sites. They kind of get notorious on the internet for a while, and then all of a sudden, oh, Pirate Bay is down, or Kazaa, or Napster, or whatever. It's always just going to be a game of cat and mouse. Right. I really think it, and it's also, at the end of the day, you're never going to get a stream that's a super great quality. And for most people, the big, big important fights like this, they want that good quality. And if it's not a big, big fight like this, there's not a lot of interest, there's not a lot of streams. So it'll be an issue. They'll probably think about it and worry about it, and then the One World Government will put an end to it.
I'm just saying, even if 100,000 people watch it on a stream, you're still talking $10 million of revenue. Those people were going to buy it, you know what I mean? I don't know. Just like for that kind of money, I feel like, I don't know, they must have a team of people policing Facebook and Twitter and social media and torrent sites. And it's just interesting how they would approach it, or how you even contact the people who are putting the stream up. Like, I just find that whole rigmarole kind of interesting, and the fight against it. Because to a degree, I'll be honest, I kind of defend the companies in that situation. It's like, this is my product, I'm trying to sell it, and people are stealing it from me. I know probably you and I, as a consumer, and people who have spent thousands of dollars on pay-per-views over the year, don't really look at it that way. It's like, we've given these people thousands of dollars over the years, and I'm going to stream this one show here or there with Mighty Mouse in the main event. But at the same time, I get the idea that they've spent a lot of money promoting these shows, and they're doing it to make a profit, and this is how they're distributing it. So I understand why they try and get them shut down anyway.
Oh, I know 100% that I'm stealing. When I do, like, the truth is, I don't really use streams very much. Like, I've used it only like a handful of times in MMA. If I use it for anything else, it's essentially always Liverpool games, and that's literally only because the game's not available here. I can't even pay for it. But otherwise, I think that there's just not a lot of people set up to stream. Like, you have to have somebody that knows how to stream to begin with, knows where to find it, and has their computer and everything set up on their TV. So, yeah, I'm sure it happens, and it'll be more of an issue as time marches on, because the younger generations will be more adept at it. But I'm 34, and I'm probably about the youngest of the people that would, I'm sorry, the oldest of people that would stream. So I'm on the, kind of like the buttress between the two of them. And I'm usually too lazy. Like, I have to, like, sometimes I either have to plug in the HDMI cable, which is a lot of work, or, yeah, that's really all I have to do. And I still won't do it.
Okay. So, the other little tidbit in Mayweather-McGregor news is USADA has come out and stated they are going to robustly test both gentlemen leading into their boxing match. According to my date and calendar here, the fight's only a month away, and they're going to start robustly testing them. Does this sound like it's on the up and up to you?
Of course, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. Right. I mean, like, they'll probably test them.
Right, but don't you think they should have been doing it for like the last 2 months since the fight's been announced?
Probably, yes. But you
just
know,
saying,
these things can be difficult because
it's just interesting. Well, according to this, McGregor has yet to be tested under the boxing program, but he has been tested 5 times in 2017 under the UFC's anti-doping policy. So he's been getting tested almost every month in the UFC. So you would assume McGregor's relatively clean unless he's got some new stuff they can't test for, which he might because he's got a ton of money. I never assume anyone's clean, but he's been tested 5 times anyway. Mayweather has been tested twice this year, both times this month. And it was the first time he's been tested by USADA since 2015. So God only knows what Mayweather's been doing the last 2 years. As far as PEDs and chemical usage and cheating, you would think Mayweather would have the edge in that regard.
Well, yeah, especially given that whatever he fails for, he'll just get a retroactive therapeutic use exemption.
Yes, he has done that in the past, yes. So anyway, they're saying they're going to test him, and the testing's real similar to what they do in the UFC. They're looking for EPO, HGH, peptide hormones. They're going to do the carbon isotope ratio. It's basically the top level of testing. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that, but God only knows what Mayweather's been up to the last, you know, 800 days.
It's going to be hilarious if Mayweather fails. Conor gets all this attention. He won't get the money. But if he gets all this attention and he gets to destroy Mayweather's, it won't mean shit, actually. Even if he fails, no one's going to care. When you're like over 40, I don't think anybody holds drug use against you when you're an athlete. I think so many people just look at it as, well, you know, he's just trying to keep up with the younger guys, not appreciating that that's still dangerous. But so many guys when they're older, you're just like, you know, Barry Bonds, like, well, you know, he was older and I kind of get it. And they don't see it as cheating people so much as, just keeping the playing field level and blah, blah, blah.
Change of gears here. Pat Miletich was on the MMA Hour with Ariel Helwani, one of our favorite journalists, and he says Matt Hughes is surprising the doctors and no longer in a coma. This is being reported as, like, fact everywhere. What I know Hughes's family was telling basically the media and fans that they shouldn't listen to any other news on this. They'll come out with information on Hughes and how he's doing. But Miletich seems to think he's
a doctor.
Or we're part of the family. I don't know what Miletich thinks. But he essentially said Hughes is making great leaps and he's no longer in a coma and he's improving. It's going to be a long road. Any type of head trauma at that level, there's going to be some rehab. I don't know why Miletich is... I don't know, but maybe it's like physical stuff afterwards, like some,
I know.
You know how sometimes people don't know how to walk, you gotta relearn how to walk or whatever bullshit it is, how to make a fist, that sort of thing.
Relearn how to think.
Yeah, I don't know if that was ever Hughes's specialty. That's not appropriate, but anyway.
He's a dumb jock who's in a coma and nobody can even tell.
What, Do you think Miletich is, he's speaking out of turn here?
Fuck off. I mean, I'm sure Pat's very close with all of them. I have no doubt about that. I believe that what he's saying, he says earnestly. I don't think he's out there, you know, playing Ariel, per se. But, I mean, these fucking quotes from him, I'm 100% sure he's gonna make a full recovery. You can't say that. Real doctors don't talk that way for a reason, you asshole. Don't say that. It's not, one, it's not his place. Two, no, it's never his place. There's no way that could ever be his place. I don't care if you're Mark Hughes, you shouldn't be out there saying he can make 100% recovery. No, only a doctor can say that. Only a doctor can say that. You can't say that. You're a cage fighter. And shut up. And everybody else more important than Miletich, because Miletich is going to do what he's going to do. And if I was in a situation and, like, my buddy was sick, like, if you're in the hospital and somebody's asking me, I'd be like, oh, yeah, Matt's going to be fine. He's going to do great, blah, blah, blah. Because what are you going to really say? Like, you don't want to be like,
he's fucked.
Yeah, like, the family doesn't want to talk about it publicly, but I wouldn't, let's just say I wouldn't get him a Book of the Month Club membership, okay? Like, I don't think he's gonna use it. Don't get him anything for Christmas. Wink, wink. But, I mean, it's just so stupid. Just, everybody should stop reporting like he knows anything. He said shit on Ariel, and I know people are looking for something because of what Hughes went through, but it's not, I don't care. You don't get this report that he's going to be okay, because what if he's not? What if he's, you know, he got hit by a fucking train? That's not a joke. So,
well, it's one of those things where they always talk about getting, like, two sources and having reputable people on record talking about it. I wouldn't really consider Miletich in this situation a real great source of information on Hughes' medical condition.
And I know why it's out there, because it's not your typical, you know, you really want the two sources, especially if they're going to be anonymous. And this isn't even like somebody sourced it. It was on the Helwani show.
Right.
And I'm sure he just said it and everybody else just reports it. And I get why they do, because it's newsworthy that he said something, I guess. But it should be newsworthy in that Pat Miletich says it, not newsworthy as in this is an objective fact. This is a guy who is friends with a dude who got hit by a train. And then suddenly he's out there talking about how, like, well, you know, his truck probably got stuck in the gravel and he spun out a little bit and this and that. Like, he played doctor, he played CSI, he played train engineer. It's just everything you could do. And maybe it's just the curse of Miletich being a pundit now, that he's kind of has that idea in his head of, like, your brain gets – he gets his brain rewired. He trained himself in his rehab to always try to, you know, find the story or make news or something. But Matt Hughes is really fucked up. You don't just – you're not in a coma for a long time, and then, like, a day or two later, they're all like, yeah, you know, well, he's going to be fucking great. You know, yeah, he got hit by a train, and he was in a coma for 6 weeks, totally going to be okay, 100% recovery. No.
Well, the headlines I saw were ridiculous. I think I sent it to you. It's like, Matt Hughes out of coma will make a full recovery. I'm like, oh, wow, that's great. But then I read the story. I'm like, Pat Miletich just said this offhanded. And it was just like, I want to say it was fake news, but it was one of those headlines that didn't really convey the message of the story at all. But I know we had speculated about how in 2017 do you get hit by a train in your car, because it seems hard. It doesn't happen that often unless you're fucked up or intentionally trying to get run over by a train, or it's one of those scenes from, like, cartoons where you tie the lady up and put her on the tracks. But Miletich gave a little more information on what apparently happened. He said the engineer said – so this is secondhand. I'm presuming Miletich didn't actually talk to the train engineer. He probably got this from the family. And the train engineer probably talked to the police, who told this to the family, who told it to Miletich, who told it to Ariel. So this is like a fifth-hand story, I think. The engineer said Matt had stopped on the gravel road. It's a hill going up. It's a real quick hill that goes up to the railroad tracks. He had stopped, then tried to get across it in time. The train was going almost 50 miles per hour. When you're out in the country, there's no crossing guards, there's no lights. It's almost like he saw it, then tried to beat it. What I would say is that you're on a gravel road out in the country on a hill, and you're trying to punch it and get over. You're going to swing tires. He didn't get across in time and got clipped on the passenger side.
Yeah.
So I guess the big question is this. Why did he stop on the tracks in the first place? I can understand your tires spin, you're trying to get across the track, and you get held up a little bit because your tires are spinning on this loose gravel. That I get. But why stop to begin with?
Well, if Pat Miletich was actually a crime scene investigator, we'd probably know the answer to that question. But since he's not, and we're getting what is the definition of hearsay, who knows? His car got stuck in the gravel or whatever. I don't know. There's a fucking train coming. I don't know how you get hit by a train. I don't know how you don't see it coming. But
hear it, yeah.
Okay, I can understand maybe not hearing it. Like, I know sometimes people get surprised by this shit. Fine, we don't appreciate trains, but I don't know. Like, I always slow down and like paranoid about going over train tracks. Like you never know if that, like I'm going to really risk my life. I guess I do kind of, but I don't want to put too much faith in my life with, you know, a single piece of wood going down some flashing lights. Like, oh, that didn't go off. I must be okay. Nah, I can still die.
I hate to do this, but we got to go back to Mayweather-McGregor for a second. I just saw a story from everyone's favorite website, TMZ. One of Floyd Mayweather's TMT members tells TMZ Sports he's courting Nate Diaz to walk out with Floyd for the McGregor fight, and he says there's a real chance it will happen. This guy's name is Jason Lee. And has been at all the pressers with Floyd, I guess. Lee also happens to be from Stockton, coincidentally, home of Nate Diaz, and says he's making a serious run to get Nate to be a special TMT VIP for the fight to essentially troll Connor.
Yeah, if there's ever going to be a camp that's going to have a lot of leaks, I imagine Floyd Mayweather's camp does.
Do you think Nate would do it?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
He'd probably try to get paid for it, but he probably would get paid for it. I mean, remember, like, Burger King paid, like, $500,000 or whatever when they had the Burger King walk out?
Remember Triple H walked out with him once?
Yeah, he has all kinds of weird people walk out with him. And you know what? Yeah. If you're Connor, I think that's the best thing that could ever happen for you. All you're is setting up his next big fight. You're making that fight even bigger. That's perfect.
Absolutely.
This is the best thing you could ever go. Go for it, Floyd. Make Connor even more money.
I agree. So that would be interesting. I guess another side story to this circus of a show. Speaking of circuses, referee Mario Yamasaki and Michael Chiesa may have a grappling match. Have you heard about this?
No.
Do you like the sounds of it so far?
Yes.
All right. It's likely not going to happen, but if you remember back to the Chiesa and Lee fight from UFC Fight Night 112 in June, Chiesa was upset with the stoppage of the fight. Lee had locked in a rear naked choke, and Chiesa looked to have gone out. His arms went limp. He had stopped hand fighting, and we talked about this in detail back then. And Yamasaki stopped the fight. It might have been a second or two early, but it looked like Chiesa went limp. He immediately got up, argued the decision. Dana hated the stoppage. Chiesa hated the stoppage. And Yamasaki took a lot of flack. I don't think either of us really were too bent out of shape about it. But Chiesa basically challenged him to this grappling match. Chiesa told, again, Ariel, I would like to test Yamasaki's fifth-degree black belt in a friendly grappling match and see if he's what he says he is. Now, I'm not saying it in a hostile way. I'm saying, hey, if you're a fifth-degree black belt, you should back up for the decisions you made. As a martial artist myself, that's my open challenge to him, to headline Onnit Invitational on September 30th.
I mean,
Yamasaki's response, I'm 53 years old.
This is a great idea. Let's do it. Woohoo!
I don't train anymore. How am I going to do this? And what's the point of him fighting me? What would that change? What does he want to prove? It's childish. Even if he catches me, or if I catch him, that won't change anything that happened in his fight. What is he trying to prove?
Oh, I want this fight to happen now.
Then he says,
I want it to happen, especially when he says, even if he catches me. Oh, Yamasaki at 53, small, probably not really training, still has this mindset of, he's not going to catch me. He still thinks there's a chance that he would last with a world-class fighter. Oh, this definitely needs to go down.
Yamasaki went on, if he gives me some time to train, I'd grapple with him. Tell him to come to my academy, no problem. I have 10 academies in the United States. He can come anytime he wants.
Whoa, you buried the lead there. Yamasaki's got 10 schools. What the fuck? Fifth degree black belt. Not in jiu-jitsu, he ain't. Not at 53 years old, he ain't. I mean, shit. He's a fuck. Whatever. It's not going to happen. Especially when you really lay it out there like that. Yeah, I'm 53 and I don't train. Yeah, that's probably a pretty good reason not to do this.
Can you imagine, like, Joe Rogan, like, on an invitational headlined by Yamasaki versus Michael Chiesa? It's so awesome.
Well, you know, I gotta watch myself. I can't say no. We live in the era of Trump. This is definitely going to happen.
Out of, like, all the freak show fights, out of, you know, Bob Sapp and Gabby Garcia, this would be the best freak show fight ever. Like, a referee can't get in there and be competitive with fighters just based on... I know, but that was, like, before he was really reffing, and it was on little shows. He wasn't going up against guys.
He fought for real, though. He didn't do no jits match. Like, that's really
I know.
Fucked up.
No, I know. I've watched a couple of them, but it's just, like, at this stage of the game, it's like, I don't think judges should be fighting or refs should be fighting. It's just a weird crossover, and it seems like a conflict of interest. What happens if Yamasaki's assigned to – he gets choked out by Chiesa, let's say, which you would presume – and then he's got to ref a fight with one of Chiesa's teammates or something. Like, there's just a conflict of interest there.
Oh, yeah, no, it's a terrible idea. There's so many stupid reasons to do this, no good reasons to do it. But I favor stupid reasons always in life.
And, I would watch it. I hope it happens.
I want more people to do this. Can you imagine how great it would be if, you know, instead of being blacklisted, Tim Donaghy just had to play Michael Jordan one-on-one in basketball until Jordan said it's over. That would have been awesome. We could do this like yeah. Ed Hockey Lee there or whatever his name was in the NFL. He's always looking all jacked up. Let's see him go out there. Let's see him go out there and just see if he can just try to score from the one against some random defensive end or something. Oh, this is a fantastic trend we could start here in the world of sport.
I would embrace it. UFC 215 is not this weekend, but it's actually on September 9th at Rogers Place in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. We've had a few fights added to it in the last few days. Last week, all we really had was JDS versus Ngannou, which is a good fight, but not a headliner by any stretch. But now, one flyweight fight with Demetrius Johnson versus Ray Borg. So Johnson eventually got what he wanted. He wanted Borg next, and he didn't want to fight Dillashaw. So apparently DJ won that argument. And then we've got the bantamweight women's title fight of Amanda Nunes versus Valentina Shevchenko, which was the fight that was supposed to happen a couple weeks ago, but Amanda Nunes had a stuffy nose and had to pull out.
Yeah, it's awesome. Dana said that basically he said Amanda Nunes will never headline a show again. Here she is in what they will undoubtedly call a co-main event, and they'll sell as a double headliner. And then he said that not only would Demetrius Johnson not fight Ray Borg, he basically threatened to cancel the entire division, and meanwhile DJ's headlining a pay-per-view. This is awesome. Dana's just... There's no point in anything. The fighters, the inmates are running the asylum now. This company's so great.
Yeah, it's something else. Hey, I mean, we were even saying it. It's like... You look at them letting go, and granted, people think executives and that sort of thing, it's like a bullshit job. They don't do anything. They just collect huge paychecks. But they're managers, too, and they manage things and people and staff and hopefully keep everybody going in the right direction. And on top of it, it's like you lose Joe Silva, you lose Lorenzo, just all these key people to the company. And now you're starting to see some of the damage that can cause from within when you've got new, inexperienced people in these spots where you had, you know, your leaders and veteran staff.
Yeah, and, you know, the new boys own the company, and they have no concept of – I don't think they know what they bought. It's not a sports league, and even if it was, sports aren't entertainment. They may seem entertaining, but they have a different set – of rules in place, and they don't seem to get it, and that's why we're probably going to have Michael Chiesa versus Mario Yamasaki in a kung fu match with CM Punk as the ref.
That UFC 215 card, though, is looking really loaded. So you've got the two title fights, JDS and Ngannou, Jeremy Stephens versus Gilbert Melendez, Henry Cejudo versus Wilson Hayes, Neil Magny versus Rafael Dos Anjos. It's a really strong card. Granted, it's not huge draws, but you're talking really, really good fights up and down the show.
Yeah, you know, it was like one of those shows where it's kind of happening. You're like, really? Really? And then they add the two title fights. You go, okay, yeah, I could pay for that. I could not illegally stream it. Good for you guys.
hopefully Edmonton does a little better job licensing the fighters for this fight than they did with Tim Haig, though.
Well, if anybody dies on this show, that'll certainly be noteworthy.
Yes. Yeah, deaths usually are in fights. They tend to get noticed. But Edmonton's taken a lot of heat, their athletic commission or whatever. I shouldn't say a lot of heat. Within Edmonton, it's a news story. But the guy who runs their commission's kind of being, really heavily criticized for the way he handled Tim Haig and allowing him to fight with multiple knockouts in the last couple of years, that sort of thing. So
it's weird how when you're the commission that oversees health and safety and somebody dies, that you get criticized for it.
It's not fair.
It's sad.
Very sad, yes. I hate when people get criticized unjustly. Another fight coming up, not huge, but should maybe be on the radar for Bellator. Paul Daly versus Lorenz Larkin, Bellator 183 in San Jose. That was booked this week as well. Granted, they're both coming off losses, but two of the higher-ranked welterweights in Bellator.
That's a game of chicken. Which asshole's going to try to take down first?
I don't think it'll be Daly. Then we also had an important, I guess you could say, jiu-jitsu match, grappling match this past week. Is it Hodger or Roger?
There's a lot of debate on that, which sounds
what
stupid.
What does he say? Somebody should just ask him. What's your name, buddy?
Yeah, I know. I actually think it's Roger. Everybody wants to say Hodger because we've been trained. But I believe it's actually Roger Gracie.
Okay.
But everyone's going to say Hodger because we all want to pretend like we're Brazilian.
Or smart. You know, I think some people try and use the accents to seem more smarter than they actually are.
It's a cheat code for assholes that want to think they're worldly.
Okay, fair enough. I'm going to go with Roger. Roger Gracie submitted Marcus Almeida, Buchecha, as they call him. It was a rematch from a grappling match from like 10 years ago, but essentially Gracie lays claim to being, I guess, the greatest heavyweight in competitive jiu-jitsu ever. Is that accurate? You would know better than me.
Yeah, I mean, he already was. I mean, jiu-jitsu, like wrestling, you don't really get... Yeah, beating people individually is important, but it's really about your accomplishments. Anybody can beat anybody. We all kind of know that. It's the guys who go up there and win the 5-6 matches in a day and get that medal that, you know, it does mean more. That said, I mean, Buchecha has had some injuries, but he's still younger and more active. Gracie, he's been more or less out of the game. He had a match against, I think it was against Megaton. No, it wasn't. Oh, it was, Comprito. He had a match against Comprito a while back and he just schooled him. But this was awesome in the sense that not a lot happened. They tried to grip fight, tried to get a takedown. Then, Roger pulled guard. Immediately got the back out of bow and arrow choke in, and he got it so damn quick. And against a guy who, you know, obviously is world class, you'd expect to have great defense. And it just shows in jiu-jitsu, with these guys who are super great, it's a battle over position more than anything. Because once a guy gets to somewhere dominant, they're always going to get the finish. And we saw it here, and damn if it wasn't impressive. I mean, he choked him bad. So good for you, Roger Gracie.
Now Gracie still does MMA, I believe, right?
I think
he fights for ONE. Like, he's their heavyweight champion.
He might do some shit like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's 35 now. He basically retired from jiu-jitsu afterwards. I'm looking now. His last fight was in May of 16, so about a year ago. He fought for ONE championship and ONE. I guess he's their cruiserweight champion. Probably, I guess they have a cruiserweight
in the mid 220 or something like that.
Yeah,
maybe didn't ONE prohibit weight cutting?
It might be ONE. Yeah,
because they had like somebody. Oh, they had that ONE fight with against Ben Askren, and the guy missed it like 50 times.
Right. Yeah. So he. Gracie, yeah, he's weird because he had that ONE fight in UFC with Tim Kennedy that was terrible. back in 13, and he lost to Tim Kennedy at 185. So,
he's not a fighter.
Anyway. He's no, I mean, that's kind of your standard Gracie MO, isn't it?
Yeah, they're terrible at real fighting.
Yeah, so once people figured out how it worked, they did not seem as impressive.
A diet of asahi beans or whatever the fuck it is, asahi fruit, and no sex does not make you a great fighter.
You think Crone will do anything?
He's looked okay, actually, in his MMA career so far. He's young, he's athletic. He's not going to do anything, though. I think that, honestly, you get to the highest levels in MMA and UFC. There's been Damian Maia in modern times. That's it. And even Maia had to go through years of striking and changing himself and all that stuff. And at a lighter weight class is at 45 and all that for Crone. I just don't see him being an elite guy. He might get to the UFC, but he ain't going to win no title.
I tend to agree. It's not easy to win world championships in the UFC. We do have shows this
weekend.
Although
it's easy to win an interim championship. Fuck, you just got to fight three times and you get one.
Are you aware that there's two major shows on Saturday, July 29th?
No.
No? You don't know about Professional Fighters League coming from the Xfinity Arena in Everett, Washington on July 29th? You haven't heard about this?
I'm shocked. You said two major shows.
This is major. It's going to be on NBC Sportsnet.
Yeah, no. The UFC is a major show. Professional Fight League is a once-in-a-lifetime event. I can't even classify it as a major show. It is transcendent is what it is. And we will probably have, if I had to guess, I have no clue at all who they possibly put out there in the main event.
I will tell you, it's a prospect. He's 16-0. His name is Andre Harrison. He's going to be facing Steven Rodriguez. A lot of people don't know Harrison, but his last win was over Lance Palmer. He's got a win over Steven Seiler, Desmond Green, some named guys, but he's never really, fought elite guys, but you know, lower level UFC guys, he's beat pretty handily. So he's in the main event. And then you've also got a couple other fights with, Yushin Okami versus Andre Luis Leal Lobato. And Jake Shields versus Danny Davis Jr. Danny Davis Jr. is a 13-11-1 fighter.
Is he related to, like, the Danny Davis of pro wrestling fame?
Like the shady referee? Or the weird guy from Ohio Valley?
I think the weird guy from Ohio Valley.
That's quite the description of a human being.
How would you like to be honest? I'm the weird guy from Ohio Valley pro wrestling.
But do you know, that's like one of those references, like,
five people.
How many people in the world would even understand? I thought I was pressing my luck with you if you would even get that.
No, I was thinking of the Danny Davis Arena. That's the only reason I know that name.
Right. But there was also like a referee who turned heel. He was at like WrestleMania 3. Remember he was like with the Hart Foundation or something? He was like a heel ref in the mid 80s, but anyway.
I know Dave Hedner.
Well, I'm looking. Yes, he was an evil referee also. But this guy, Danny Davis Jr., appears...
Yeah, Yamasaki could be the evil ref of MMA. And then they all get in there and fight him as revenge.
And, like, he could throw salt and stuff?
Yeah, like, he could just do what he's doing now, being really shitty at his job.
Like, you're getting choked out, then he throws salt in your eyes on top of it to, like, make it worse, then you tap?
Yeah, exactly. Like, there was something in my eye. No, there wasn't, pussy.
He doesn't see eye pokes and stuff. That would be a good gimmick. Like, he could help all the Asian fighters. Like, all of a sudden, Gomi goes on this, like, crazy win streak, but it's, like, all based on low blows and eye pokes and stuff.
It'd be funny to see how many fighters have actually picked up on it, and they'd be like, oh, wait, hold on a second. And all the Asian guys are backstage, like, guys, we can get away with fucking murder. This is great.
Gomi's won six in a row. This is quite the career resurgence here. Anyway, Danny Davis Jr. in the PFL is not white. he looks to be African American, I believe, from his picture here. He fights out of dry steel jiu-jitsu and extreme couture, which probably means he's on some sort of drugs, but we'll be definitely looking out for that show. You'll have to have two TVs going at once to watch PFL and oh shit, you're gonna be at the wedding, you're gonna miss both shows.
Yeah. I thought that's what you meant by major show. I'm like, are we really gonna call my brother's wedding a fucking major show? Like,
that
I would call
a good
mine.
Way to describe it.
It's gonna be a shit show when I'm done with it.
Probably. Anyway, so you've got that going. Okay, will you just do it off the top of your head, or are you going to have, like, cards? What do you do?
I'm pretty sure that I should write things down if it comes off the top of my head.
But you kind of pride yourself on being able to go off the cuff.
Yeah, I know, but I also, when I go off the cuff, that little voice in my head will say, make the funny joke, make the funny joke. And nobody will think it's very funny except for me. And I need to, I have some ideas. And it has to be short, I think.
You should write it.
Yeah.
I mean, it might be important to some people who might matter to you a little bit. I don't know. Then we've also got on set.
I really don't give a shit, to be honest. I don't care about anything at all. It means nothing to me.
Okay, but some people there might care about it.
Eh, they should get over themselves.
Okay. We've also got UFC 214 on Saturday night, July 29th. This is coming from the Honda Center in Anaheim, California. Personally, I think the show should have been in Vegas, but whatever.
And 3 weeks
and
ago.
What's that?
In Vegas 3 weeks ago.
That would have made more sense also. But John Jones couldn't fight yet because he was suspended for taking female fertility drugs.
Look, when your dick doesn't work, you come back and talk to me.
Isn't that such a scam? Like, I feel like people believe that story because Jones has this history of just being an idiot and doing stupid things. And it's like totally plausible he would take a dick pill. Like, you could totally imagine that and have it affect a test. Like, it's totally possible. But the more likely thing is he's doping and trying to cover it up with clomiphene.
Yeah, just a little bit more likely. Oh, but yeah.
Why would you put female fertility drugs in a dick pill? Like, it doesn't make any sense. It's
stupid. Those dick pills do have that stuff in it.
Possibly.
What doesn't make sense is why he's taking it.
Or you're a millionaire and you have some schmuck in the laboratory make up a pill and put that shit in it. Like, when you've got that kind of money, you could probably make a couple phone calls and pay some lab tech $25,000 to get you out of this thing. The stupidest part of it was he still got the full suspension. It was totally a media play on his part to not seem like a cheater and a steroid user. And
they
went
along
with it.
Getting
a fair advantage his whole career. Well, they still gave him the full year suspension.
But they said they said it was like real, but he still got a year, which is just stupid. I mean, you're right. He is dumb enough of all the fighters out there at the high level that I'd be like, yeah, John Jones would do that. But also, dude, you train in Albuquerque. I'm not really sure how close it is to Mexico, but it's called New Mexico, so you're probably close enough. Just go across the border and get some fucking real Viagra. You don't need a prescription.
Yeah, the whole thing is horseshit. But in the main event, anyways, we've got Daniel Cormier, I guess technically defending the light heavyweight championship against John Jones, who's no longer the interim light heavyweight champion because he got stripped because he was taking the dick pills. So obviously, you've had that original fight that Jones won. It was competitive. It wasn't like a blowout, like Jones killed him. I thought Jones probably won all five rounds or maybe four rounds to one. And if you look at the scorecards, it looks like a blowout. But every round was competitive. To me, the big issue is Cormier's older. He's smaller. And usually Cormier does well in fights when he can use his wrestling and throw guys around. Jones is just too big and too strong and too young for Cormier to really be able to do that. Cormier's claimed he's training his wrestling and he's going to be able to take Jones down at will. I guess we'll see, but Cormier being a couple years older, I don't really like his chances in this fight.
No, he's going to die. Cormier's going to win. Wow. I mean, it's going to go decision. I think it goes 5. I think Jones comfortably wins. He won the first fight. I don't want to say he walked away with it, but as the fight went forward, he got better and better. He just seemed to figure Cormier out. And, you know, Jones is just a disaster for pretty much anybody. But stylistically, yeah. Cormier's just got so many disadvantages. He's so much shorter. And his wrestling is good, but Jones is a wrestling kryptonite. Jones is a better striker. He's a longer striker. He's got more submissions in his arsenal. He's bigger, stronger, faster, younger, and he's just better. And more, like you said, they fought years ago. What was that, 2015? It would have been? Yeah, I think January 2015. And, yeah. And Jones, you know, made that look basically easy. And he's only still, you know, Jones, I don't think he's even 30 yet. If he is, he's like 30 exactly. Like, he's in his prime, and Cormier's, you know, getting pretty damn close to 40. You know, one guy's moving away from his prime, one guy's moving into his prime, and the guy moving into his prime is the better fighter anyways. So yeah, there could be some ring rust, and you don't want to discount that too much. But Jones is, he's preternatural. There's never been anybody like him in this sport, and he'd probably be a world champion at anything he tried, and he's going to beat the shit out of Cormier.
Yeah, I mean, I like Jones, too, in this fight, not as a human being. But the thing that got me about his last fight, that OSP fight, he should have finished that fight. And I think we've talked about this. Like, I feel like there's been a decline in Jones, and it kind of bums me out because he is so good and so talented. But I think the extracurricular activities and just the media and a lot of that crap has taken a toll on him. So he's not as hungry as he might have been in the beginning. He might not be as focused as he once was. And he's confident. He thinks he's going to win. He probably will win because he's that much better than everybody else. But it's like, I miss that guy who was on that tear in 2011 where he was choking out Machida standing up and finishing Rampage and all these, like, legendary light heavyweights in their prime, just destroying Shogun on the feet when Shogun was still the light heavyweight champion of the world. That guy, I just feel like, I don't want to say he's gone forever because he is only 30, but I wonder if the partying and all the fights way back when against all these really good guys, if it's just taken its toll and he's never going to be that guy again, which would be a bummer because it's legendary stuff as it is, but it would be even another level if he could have kept it together and stayed focused and been that guy. I just feel like there's a gradual decline with him over the last few years.
Oh, for sure. I mean, he'll never be what he could have been. I don't want to discount the partying. It can play a role. But some men are just born better, and he's one of them. And
right.
I would also say that I think that some of the reason for his performance is most guys, the higher caliber they get, the more they tend to have performances like that where they're not quite as dominant as they were on their way up. Like, even like BJ Penn, like, think about like when he fought Diego Sanchez, he absolutely owned him, but he still fought that fight somewhat cautiously. And the most famous example would be George St. Pierre. And I don't think it's a coincidence that he trains with Greg Jackson. I think that Jackson puts that mindset in guys of this is your best path to victory. And Jones is a disciple of that. And he'll follow that path all the way to the pot of cocaine at the end of the rainbow.
Yeah, I mean, I don't fault him for it. I get it. It's just, I don't know. It was such an epic run. And then the last few years, it's like decision win, decision win, decision win. Like you look at the Gustafson fight, going into that fight, nobody gave Gus a chance. And then it's like Jones is partying all week. He gets blackout drunk. He's doing coke. He like admits to all this stuff afterwards. Then he's got this weird decision win over a guy who got his ass kicked by Phil Davis.
Oh, no, I mean, he's not been what he could have been. That's for damn sure. I guess the only thing about one final thing maybe in his defense is if he did all that stuff while screwing around, if he really is clean, he's young enough that he can get clean and still do really great stuff. It's not BJ Penn at 38 or whatever saying, I'm going to finally try it. If you're 30 and you really start trying, and it's possible that Jones could do that, but even if he doesn't, you look at the Gustafson fight or the Cormier fight, Jones, for all of his flakiness, the dude's a fighter. Like, you know, when Gus pressed him, he didn't mentally break like Vitor Belfort would have. He bit down on the mouthpiece and found a way to win, and he's, you know, worst case scenario, he does that with the Cormier.
So you had mentioned earlier, do you think there's a chance the fight still doesn't happen? I mean, we're only, what, 3 days away?
And
do you have a prediction on what the reason will be?
Yeah, John Jones and drugs.
Okay.
When I watched them do their talking thing on Saturday on UFC on Fox, I saw Jones, you know, he's very serious, and Cormier was trying to hype the fight, and Jones is very stoic and just kind of, he could be very serious given the stern answer if he's all business. I really saw it as a guy who thinks they just did the drug test, and I know I didn't pass that shit. I don't want to talk too much shit. I don't want to be too over the top because I'm going to look like an asshole pretty soon. So I think the fight will happen, but I think that he fails for something post-fight.
Yeah, I've seen him do interviews like that in the past where he just doesn't really – he seems like he's miserable, doesn't want to be there, and doesn't really answer the questions. Like Rampage had a couple interviews like that too where it was just like non-responsive. Like if you're going to go on, just do the interview and do it right and hype the fight. Don't be a douchebag. But, again, I'm not a fan of Jones in general. We've got a couple other
– he banged Ronda.
Reportedly. I wasn't there for it.
Pat Miletich is a good enough source, so is Quentin Jackson.
On Twitch, drunk. You know what I was thinking, too, when you were talking about Greg Jackson, the sports killer, the MMA killer? Donald Cerrone and Diego Sanchez do not follow that rule set at all that GSP and John Jones do. They go balls to the walls every fight, no matter what, whether it's a title fight or not.
That's probably Jackson knows that there's certain dudes that you just can't, you know, certain horses can't be broken. And so you just gotta let them run wild.
Okay. It's just interesting that you look at it and you say, well, yeah, they do have that MO, but it's not every guy is boring or goes for the takedown and just grinds it out on top like a blanket. That doesn't always happen with their fighters. It's just, I don't know.
Donald Cerrone also fucking drives an RV to the fights, so.
Right, but I'm surprised those two guys never had a blow up or something. You know what I mean? Where Cowboy was like, fuck off, and I'm not doing that, and, you know, because what's the point of having a coach if you're not even going to listen to him and just do whatever the hell you want anyway?
I actually think that it's one of the strengths of Greg Jackson is that he knows his fighters and he trains every fighter differently. He doesn't try to do, this is my style, you're all going to fit into this. Everybody fights the same. Right. It's okay. Like you see him when he talks to Cerrone. Sometimes Cerrone's like, he knows I gotta yell at him. And he doesn't need the technical advice. With Jones, it's you're a Porsche, you're a Lamborghini, and I need to fine tune you. And yeah, and Cerrone is you know, an off road vehicle covered in bullet holes.
In the semi main event, we've got Tyron Woodley versus Damian Maia. Woodley will be defending the welterweight title in that fight. Maia got this fight based off of a win over Jorge Masvidal, where Maia kind of took Masvidal down at will and dominated the fight, didn't quite finish it, but it clearly had the edge. The big question in this one is, can Maia get Woodley down to the mat? A lot of people don't think he'll be able to because Woodley's got some good wrestling and takedown defense. Personally, you never really see anybody stop Maia's takedowns, whether it's Jake Shields or really anyone. Maia's unbelievable on the ground, and this is pretty much his last shot at winning a title. He's 39 now, still beating the best guys in the world. He's kind of gone back to his ground game, and jiu-jitsu is what he was known for. And he's got, geez, 7 straight wins, with wins over Neil Magny, Gunnar Nelson, Matt Brown, Carlos Condit, and Masvidal. So to me the question is, can he get Woodley down to the mat? Even if he can't finish him, can he keep him there? Because standing, Woodley's going to have the edge.
I think that this fight's going to be awful. I picture this being very boring. On the ground, it's going to be all Maya, and Woodley's going to be pure defense, which he should be. And on the feet, Woodley's not an aggressive striker anyways. He's willing to be boring to win a fight. He's got that mindset. And against someone like Maya, he'll be incentivized to not be overly aggressive, to hide behind jabs so he doesn't expose himself for takedowns. Maya is very similar striker to Woodley in that he's not all that great at it. He's just good enough. I think he'll get a takedown. I think it gets Woodley's back. He could choke him. He absolutely could choke him. I think that Woodley will be trained enough to defend it. Usual caveat, blah, blah, blah. He trains at Rufus Sport. I know the people there. But I think Maya will probably gas. He does seem to fade a little bit in his fights. I think like the Rory McDonald fight where he looks so dominant. And then something happened. We just couldn't get those takedowns and impose it as much. So I think that Woodley wins a very boring and cautious decision.
Ugh. I'm going Maya by submission.
I hope you're
rear naked choke. I would love for Maya to win. Cause it's like he's fought so long and so many guys and has been so good, but underappreciated. It's like, and this is his last chance. He's never getting a title fight again. And he had to beat so many guys to get this fight and top guys too. It's like, it would just be kind of a happy ending for him. Like, I'd love to see him win the title and retire. Like that would be a good story. I mean, he's 25-6 overall. He's been fighting in the UFC since, jeez.
Yeah,
07.
Yeah,
October of 07.
What was the title fight with Silva? Oh, it was spring of 08?
2010.
Okay. Yeah, it's been a long time.
In a terrible fight, but he, and all the submission wins, submission of the night. It's like the guy, I don't know. I'd like to see him finally get his moment. It may or may not happen. It's not an easy fight by any stretch. He's fighting arguably the best welterweight in the division, but it'd be kind of a happy ending for him.
Yeah, and at 39. And I would love to see him win too. I think he's a really nice guy. He's reinvented himself at welterweight. Just went back to his roots. And again, he's one of the few guys out there that could legitimately beat anyone because his submissions are the equivalent of one punch knockout power. You know, you put him in there with Lawler, I absolutely could see him taking Lawler's back and choking him out. Same with Cerrone. Obviously, I can see it with Woodley. Wonder Boy. Yeah, anybody in the world he gets his hands on, that he's for at least 5 minutes, he can suck anybody into his quicksand world. And I hope he does. I just don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, in 31 fights, he's only got one loss by finish. He was knocked out.
Yeah.
Yeah, back in 09, though. He hasn't been finished since 09.
That was in August or something.
Yeah, and that was when August 29th of 09. And that's like before he had any real striking at all, you know? So anyway, I'm pulling for old man Maya.
Speaking of 2 years.
We have another title fight with Cyborg Santos. I guess they call her Christiane Justino now, but anyway, Cyborg, we call her here at halfguarded.com. She's fighting Tanya Evinger, the former Invicta bantamweight champion. Evinger's taking this fight on short notice. She's 36 years old, 5'7". I don't like her chances, man.
Oh, she's gonna die. She's gonna die real bad. Like, Cormier's gonna get beat. Evinger's not gonna make it. She might make it through the first round, but she's in there with bigger, stronger, younger, meaner, and more chemically advanced.
Evinger's won 9 in a row. Her last loss was to Sarah McMahon by unanimous decision back in 2011. So, I mean, she's a good bantamweight. I wouldn't even consider her
No, she's got,
there's a no contest.
No,
I'm not counting that.
Doesn't she have like a loss like Raquel Pennington or somebody? Would she try to get an Ultimate Fighter?
Maybe, but I don't think that's counted in her as her part of her real record. Well, that's probably like a 2-round amateur thing.
Yeah, not in their fake stuff, but in the real world it counts. The point is that she's very good, but she ain't great. And she's
right. I'm saying that as a sorry.
No, she's fucking bantamweight. You know, she's right. Moving up in weight too. Like, it's just a disaster for her.
Yeah.
Typical Cyborg opponent, though. Somebody who's much smaller, bit of a name, older in this case, it's going to be messy. The only chance that, the Avengers' best chance is probably the fact that it's in California. So I'm curious to see how the weight cut stuff works with Cyborg on this one. Because California's got different rules, and Cyborg, you know, she almost died making 140 pounds, and she's had trouble with 45. So if this fight may not happen either, or may not be a title fight for Cyborg. It will be for Avenger, but I could easily see Cyborg coming in at, say, 147. I'm going to say the Cyborg weighs 147 and a half pounds. She doesn't get a title shot. She beats Avenger. And so we still don't actually have a UFC women's featherweight champion.
Right. Well, that would be fair because there's no division either. So that would be all right.
That'd be a great ignominious end to that division. Just one title fight and that's it.
Did you see, Durandamy's coming back? She's fighting, I don't even know, but like in Sweden or something.
Oh, really?
And she's fighting at, yeah, and she's fighting at 135.
Has she been cut from the UFC?
No, she's still there. She's got a fight booked.
Oh, she's going to be on the UFC Sweden show.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought she was just going to be fighting like some random small show in Sweden. She'd been banned.
No. No, she's on the UFC, but it's just like, what the hell? Like you were the champ and now you're just going to give that belt. Like granted, you don't want to fight Cyborg, but
I've never seen anybody give up a championship to go to a different weight class and not get an immediate title shot at that weight class. Like, yeah, I'm done with this division. I'm just going to go fight in the trenches in this other one.
It is weird. I'm trying to figure out who she's fighting because it's somebody who's not even really a name. I can't find it anywhere.
I mean,
they
couldn't even bother to do like, have her and Nunez in some sort of champion versus champion thing. That would have actually, honestly, that would have been something.
Right. And I'm actually kind of surprised they didn't do it.
Well, I am. I'm not, because they got pissy because she challenged Dana's authority and she values her health and safety more than the UFC does. And she doesn't want to become the, part of the 99% of NFL athletes that die from CTE. Not that she's going to be in the NFL anytime soon, but you get the point.
Yes. She said, I don't regret anything. I stand for my principles, and I believe that forbidden substances are not allowed in sport, especially not fighting. This is a full contact sport. People have ended up in wheelchairs. I was just reading the other day that a boxer did his first pro fight and is now drinking out of a straw. We put our lives on the line, and we are here to entertain people.
Imagine if she heard about Tim Hague.
She might retire just completely. I can't figure out who she's supposed to fight next. It's actually kind of pissing me off.
It'd be really funny if she fought Cyborg.
Oh, I got it.
In Edmonton. Oh.
Marion Renault.
Oh,
like, what the hell?
Well, like, yeah. She doesn't have a real career. I don't know. They had her fucking headline a show, and now she's fighting in Sweden, and I'm sure maybe even like the Fight Pass opener.
Like, I get if Duranomy's scared to fight Cyborg, but it's like, you're going to get beat up no matter what fight you take. Why not take the Cyborg fight? If you lose, you move back down, but at least you get a better payday than you would. Like, she would be defending a championship against Cyborg, get that payday, then move back down to 135, just take the beating, and, or maybe, who knows, you land a lucky punch, you beat Cyborg in the biggest upset ever, and you're a huge star. It's like, I would have taken that risk as opposed to Marion Renault in the Netherlands on September 2nd over fucking Labor Day weekend.
Yeah, you know, this may speak to just, the reputation and knowledge, I would say, within fight camps of what Cyborg does.
Maybe.
Not just, you know, chemically and otherwise, but, like, the true danger that she presents as far as being on the juice, if you will, as opposed to anybody else, because, you know, we've seen it. She's dangerous in there with people. This isn't your normal fighter. This is essentially, like, she's fighting with legalized soccer kicks and no one else is.
Right.
Yeah, I like that.
So we're both picking Cyborg in this one. In a very fun fight, one that hasn't happened, I believe, three times. This fight has been either canceled or moved. We've got Robbie Lawler versus Donald Cerrone at welterweight. Two guys who I personally think are getting a little bit longer in the tooth, but action fighters, legendary guys, should be, you know, all standing, striking. Somebody's likely to get knocked out in this one, you think?
Yeah, my official pick is Cerrone by head kick. It's going to be his lead left hand.
Really?
Kick. Yeah, I just think that in a stand-up affair, he's got a little more tools than Lawler. And Lawler is a headhunter. Cerrone tends to only get hurt at the body. I think they play into one another. It's just kind of a hunch. I think either guy could win this thing. But Cerrone, I don't want to discount Lawler too much. He just had the one loss. Fight will be great, though, no matter what. It's kind of crazy that this thing has been completely under the radar. So it'll be great. And, I'm picking Cerrone by knockout.
Okay. Lawler's been off almost a full year now since that Woodley loss. And, I mean, I'm trying to think of two guys, like active guys in the UFC who have been through more wars than those two.
Mark Hunt,
just like
maybe.
Stand-up brawls. Maybe.
Is Lawler 35?
Lawler's 35, Cerrone's 34.
Jeez. It's kind of crazy that Lawler's only 35.
But if you look, I agree. Because you think about the Diaz fight and stuff like that, how long ago that was. That was like pre-Ultimate Fighter, right?
I mean, you know, Robbie Lawler, remember, he was the first guy to ever be really kind of featured when the UFC was on cable, when they were on Best Damn Sports Show, period. And they had him in the clip of him and Aaron Riley, and that was from UFC 37.
Right.
You know, he's been around for a long fucking time. And that was a war back then, too.
Right, but if you just, even if you look at the names, both of them that fought, you're like, oh my god, it's just like
there's nobody
killer
left.
After killer. Well, and on top of it, it's like Lawler was fighting at 185 for a while, too, fighting bigger dudes, you know? Just crazy, the wear and tear those guys have faced, and still to be at the level they are is really, really impressive.
Yeah, you know that Chris Nowitzki just beats off every night thinking about those brains.
Yes, they're full of, what is that, tau protein? Anyway, in the opener, we've got a light heavyweight fight with Jimmy Manoa versus Volkan Ozdemir. Manoa was in the mix for this next title fight until we figured out John Jones was going to get it. He's ranked number 3 in the division. You would presume if he wins this fight, he would get the next title shot against the winner of DC and Jones, unless Jones decides he wants to fight Brock, which is getting more and more press these last few days. And then Ozdemir is coming off a knockout win as well. He is... I think it was punches, yeah. He knocked out Misha Serkinov, an up-and-coming guy. But he's looked decent.
Did you call Misha an up-and-coming guy?
Misha, not an up-and-coming, maybe.
Misha Serkinov of Dinner with Dana White fame?
Yes. I would consider him still an up-and-coming guy. He's 30. He's in the light heavyweight division. He's 13-3. Yeah, I would still... In that division, I would consider him up and coming right now, yeah. Anyway, Ozdemir is now the up and coming guy because he knocked off the former up and coming guy in Serkinov with a knockout win. He also has a split decision win over OSP. Obviously, probably Manoa was the favorite just based on career records and everything. If you had to bet, if you were a Vegas bookie. But who knows? Both guys hit hard, have knockout power. You never know what the hell's going to happen, right?
Yeah, it's designed to be on the feet. Voltron has a kickboxing background. Manoa only likes to punch people. He's got the power. I think it's set up for Manoa to look good, and which is fine. This is exactly what you should do with someone like Jimmy Manoa. He's your presumptive number one contender. There's nobody else. There's nobody else. I mean, you're going to bring up old man Shogun, I guess. So
or Gustafson, maybe.
Yeah, that's, have Shogun and Gustafson fought each other?
I feel like I can picture that.
Yeah,
I don't
so
know.
Can I, but at the same time, it left no memory. I feel like Gustafson would have won it. Still, I think Manoa wins by knockout. I think they kind of have a sloppy brawl, and everybody goes, ooh, when he knocks a man out with an uppercut.
Yeah, I don't like Manoa's chances against DC or Jones at all, though, do you?
No, but I can see the appeal of him with Jones just in the same way of Anthony Johnson. Just he's got enough power that he can knock somebody out. So, will he connect? He won't, but at least it'd be something to think about for a minute or two.
Yeah. Gustafsson defeated Shogun in December of 2012 on the undercard of Henderson versus Diaz on Fox. Unanimous decision.
Yeah, I got nothing on that one.
Yeah, no, I can picture them in the cage together, but I don't remember the fight that much either. What else? Oh, we should talk about it as well. Somebody asked John Jones on like a Facebook Live video he was doing.
By the way, we should not discount the fact that like the undercard's pretty good as far as Aljamain Sterling and Hen Barrow. That's cool.
Yeah, well. Yeah, and I like the Lamas-Jason Knight fight, too. Jason Knight's looked really good, and Lamas is a real test for him. Brian Ortega's on the undercard as well, up-and-coming featherweight. I believe he's ranked in the division now, too. But, yeah, some good stuff on the undercard. Josh Berkman's fighting at 155, which always that scares the shit out of me.
He's been at 55 for his last couple fights.
He's been up and down. I think he went back up to 172.
He's on a 5-fight losing streak.
He is 1-5 in his last 6. Yeah.
That's pretty sad.
Bit of a rough patch for what's her face's old boyfriend. What the fuck is her name? The ring card girl. Ariane. They used to be a couple. Real power couple in Hollywood. But yeah, that's pretty much UFC 214 for the most part. A lot of talk leading up to this fight is people presuming John Jones wins the fight. Who does he fight next? You got Brock Lesnar possibly getting back into the USADA pool and looking like he may want to fight again. It could be just a negotiating ploy by Brock with the WWE to get more money out of them instead of him going back to UFC. I think Brock's contract with WWE is up at Mania this year, so it would be around April. Either way, Brock would need to officially get back in the USADA pool. Some people are saying he's back in. The official statement from UFC is that he is not. So I don't know what's going on there. Either way, Brock wouldn't be able to fight till early 2018. So the big talk is who would Brock fight? Where does Jones go after this? And both guys have essentially said they want the fight. John Jones was on a Facebook Live video feed he was doing while he was signing posters at the UFC check-in thing, saying he'd love to fight Brock. And Brock came out and said he would fight John Jones anytime, anywhere, which does not sound like Brock Lesnar, but that's a potential huge fight early next year.
If it happens, it's really fun on a lot of levels. It's still Brock, and he, you know, beat Mark Hunt in his last fight out. I don't care that he's on the gas. He's always been on the gas. It's 6-1.
So is Jones.
Exactly. And, you know, Jones moving up to heavyweight. This is a fight that Jones could win. Yeah. I think it would actually be a really good test because it would get him used to the size of the biggest guys while not having to deal with the skill, particularly on the feet.
Right.
But, I mean, look, it's Brock Lesnar. He could beat anybody on any day. He's just that freaky. So this would be an awesome fight. That'd be two big names. It'd be fun. We'd see. Yeah, I think it'll probably be for an interim championship, and I'm only half kidding about that.
Maybe they could just create like a new championship, like just call it cruiserweight or something. Get Brock to weigh in at 260.
They should just have they should have a floating championship, just like the UFC main event championship. And they just use that title for every main event they want. So just have one champion and it just floats around from each guy. So it could be the only title that John Jones holds, and so does, say, Betch Kohea.
Or they could do like it Money in the Bank style. Somebody could have the thing and challenge anyone at any weight at any time. That would be good.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot they could do with this shit. Come on, WMEI. Let's get on the ball.
Gotta bring in some new bookers. I think that's pretty much it for MMA stuff this week. Do you have to go to the airport or you want to do some stuff?
I got like 6 hours left to be at the airport.
Oh, geez. I thought you had to pick somebody up sooner.
Nope. Not until later today.
All right. Well, I got a few minutes here. So today news broke. I haven't really had a chance to research it too much, but I know you like to talk about Trump and you like to talk about transgendered people. Trump announced I know they're two of your favorite topics. Trump announced today on Twitter, which is always a great source and a good way to get important information out to the American public, he announced a ban on transgender people in the U.S. military. There's already several thousand transgenders in the military at the current moment, so I don't know if it's a future ban or if all those people in the military are going to be kicked out or how you really even police this. It's a very interesting take, and obviously the left and transgendered people aren't happy about it. It seems pretty discriminatory. What do you have a take on it?
My overall take is we live in a country that wants, because I know they're starting to pay, the military is going to pay for gender reassignment surgery. I think they may have already done it in one case earlier this year, which makes us, we have to be like the only country in the fucking world, in the history of the world, that cuts the balls off of our soldiers. It's just kind of weird when you really think about, like, historically. I guess the Chinese did that with some of their eunuchs, but we're creating an army of the unsullied for real. It's just weird. Otherwise,
right? I don't think that makes sense. But if somebody, it's weird on a number of levels for me, because it's like, I don't know if Trump really truly like dodged the draft, but he's not even a military guy, and these people want to serve and help out their country no matter what kind of, if their clits turned into a penis or if their balls are now a vagina. It's like they want to help out their country and serve their country. I'm not saying the U.S. government should pay for their surgery. That seems ridiculous. I don't think our tax dollars should go towards that. If you get the surgery and you want to be in the military, like, who are we to say no? Like, I just don't get it.
The last president we had, and the only president we've had since the 90s was in the military, was President George W. Bush.
Right.
But, I mean, on stuff like this, I know anything that involves basically somebody's genitals, it immediately echoes gays in the military, or blacks in the military, and we think like every new minority group is like the same, it's the same principle behind it, and it may be, but when it comes to issues like this in the military, I really don't know. I don't like the idea that we do any kind of social engineering or even testing on the military of all things. If the generals say it, then I'm more or less gonna just say, look, you guys are the only job in the world where somebody's trying to murder you every day, and you get to murder people even more than cops. So whatever it takes. I don't know how it works with morale and camaraderie. I just am not there at all, and I have this feeling that it's totally different. If they think that it causes a problem, then it could actually lead to somebody dying on the battlefield. I can't argue against them. I don't know why it would.
I
think that there's probably a general issue that most of the people that get gender reassignment surgery have very severe mental health issues that probably should preclude them from military service anyways. When, 30% of transgendered individuals pre- and post-surgery commit suicide, that's a real high number of any group. And, to say the, we're going to let this group into the military and one out of three of them will kill themselves. Like, if it was like one out of three Jewish people will die by the age of 25, you'd be like, what the fuck? Like, that's really fucking crazy. We should look into that. And I think, I heard it best. It was, I'm drawing a blank right now. Todd Glass. I saw this interview from a couple years back with Maron, and he came out of the closet and he basically said, and I think it's a great thing, which is, I'm not really discriminated against, but I want some kid out there in Kentucky or whatever to know that it's okay. And he made the point of, if you are against gay rights, you better be real. And his words were, you better be real fucking certain, because kids are killing themselves over this shit. And the way he said that, I'm like, that's a really good point. And I look at the same thing when it comes to the transgendered issue. If everybody's supporting, I'll say, quote unquote, supporting the transgender rights as we kind of know them left, right, you better be real fucking certain on this, because these are people, a third of them are dying, and we're cutting dicks off. That's a very crude way to say it, but we are mutilating individual. So if we're right, you better damn well be really right, because this could be a fuck up. This could be modern. This could be eugenics. This could be a bunch of people meaning well and thinking we have scientific backing behind it, and we later on go, whoa, what the hell? That was kind of a weird one. Like, we live in an era where there's more and more pushback from people to stop circumcision. And meanwhile, we're increasing the number of gender reassignment surgeries. So,
Here's there's so much with it. Granted, it's not a lot of people, but I'm not a fan of discriminating against groups of people, whether they're based on race, religion, sexual preference, whatever it is. I think people should be judged individually. If there's some sort of stress test or mental exam they give soldiers, you would give the transgender person the same test. If they pass it and they seem stable, let them in just like anybody else. I don't care what they've done to their genitalia. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that should matter. I don't think it should matter who you like to fuck. Like, it shouldn't have any impact on it. Can the person do the job? These people are trying to do an honorable thing and defend their country, and it's like they're not allowed to.
But they're yucky.
I guess. Like, I don't care, though, is the thing.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's the same thing as far as women in combat. If they can pass the standards.
Right.
And to me, you get a real problem, and we have seen this happen, where they will change the standards for men and women. We see it with, firemen, where the women don't have to carry as much. And, maybe they don't get put in the same positions. Maybe. But again, if you're the one dying, or if you're the one in the battlefield, and you don't want to look at your buddy and have them be like, yeah, they lowered the how much I have to carry because I'm a woman. So you have to die in Mosul, which is part of Iraq, I think. Yeah,
I understand that part, but to me it sounds like it's all military. Does it include, desk jobs? Again, it's Trump, and it's like, why do you put that out in a tweet of all things? And to me, it's almost like I feel like something else is coming, like this is a distraction.
That's, do you know what I mean? Case. Yeah.
Because it's one of those things, everybody's going to get worked up about. People are going to be like, I don't understand transgender people. Why do they do that anyway? It's going to be all that hashed out again. Where do you go poop? All that crap is going to get rehashed again. In the meantime, there's something going on the side that's going to be kind of pushed to the back burner because so many people get up in arms about this thing when it's really like 0.00001% of the population anyway. But
no, it's a great hot button, hot take issue to throw out there as a distraction, because you can take the position, and no matter how wrong you are, this isn't going to be a big one. Like, it's going to have, when I say repercussions, it's not like if you discriminate against black people, there's tens of millions of people you're fucking over. Transgendered individuals in America are maybe 500,000 total, maybe. And if they have the same percentage of people within their group that want to join the military as in the regular population, and I doubt that that's the case, what is it, about maybe 1% of the population's in the military? So we're talking 5,000 people this could apply to. So, it's almost much ado about nothing. It's purely symbolic, essentially. But everybody's going to have a take on it, and it's got sex involved, it's got gay rights involved, it's got religion involved, it's got icky things involved, it's got the military. It's just so perfect for all the talking heads to shout about, and meanwhile, I'm sure something bad's happening in Crimea or whatever, and we're all just like, oh no, but I cared about the, whether that guy has a rifle and a gun.
Yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how it pans out. Is this something that'll be challenged in the courts, you think? How does that work?
Everything is challenged in the courts eventually.
Right.
I don't know how it would play out.
Because how does the ban even work? Is it like a law?
I'm gonna guess that the courts would side with him that he can do this for the same reason that don't ask, don't tell was always permitted. You know, it's up to it's a commander in chief's prerogative, absent, I would guess, a law by Congress to the contrary. But when it comes to running the armed forces, you know, that's his main area of government. That's one thing the president gets pretty much exclusive authority over, is overseas affairs, and the military. And yes, he's going to tweet it because that's how Donald Trump talks, and it seems weird, but let's face it, in 5 years, everything's going to be tweeted out. That's just the new PR. What are you reading right now that you're going, oh my gosh?
I'm going to send it to you. Hang on. He just sent out another tweet, which I don't even know what it means.
Oh, goody. Like, more mystery tweets from Trump. Go fey-fey.
I just sent it to you. Check your messenger. But I don't understand how you can try and convey complicated issues in 140 characters. It's like, this is important shit to a lot of people. It might not really affect you or I because we're not in the military and I'm not transgendered. I can't speak for you, but.
Awesome tweet.
Like, you can't do that. And now, just now, like literally just now as we're talking, because I have my notifications turned on for Trump because I love it so much. He goes, in America, all in caps lock, mind you, in America, we don't worship government, we worship God, with an exclamation point. And some kind of emoji after it, too. It looks like an old school, like, video camera or movie film projector sort of thing. And obviously there's a video you're supposed to watch, too, yeah. But it's on Instagram, it looks like. But, like, what are you doing? It's like, he's such a troll and, I never would have, like, voted for him. I don't.
What he's saying there is one of those, like, I don't know where it comes from. I have no idea what. I'd love to know.
It's anti-government, drain the swamp. But we don't worship government. Like, that's what he's saying.
Oh, I get that. And there's what he's saying is historically true, and it's actually, again, there's been a lot of really smart people who've written about that, and that America's faith tends to be a really good thing because it is a limiting factor on the government, because the idea that there's something beyond government that's also powerful, so therefore we can have our, you know, morality is not defined by the state. I just don't know where the hell it comes from. And again, this is Trump. Donald Trump is not a religious person at all. Zero chance. He's not a theocrat. Nothing he does is ever going to be religious-based. So he's just saying this because he thinks somebody wants to hear it. And I'm very curious. I got to see what this video is. And he's got he put the fucking video camera emoji there, which is so great. And normally you would think, oh, some intern must have helped him. But no, you look at the way he typed that in all caps. Even if you'd have to be a 15-year-old in order to do such shit like that. Or president. I got to see this video.
Very odd. Very odd. A little restaurant-related news story came out yesterday that I thought you would get a kick out of. I'm not sure if you came across this, but this is another reason you probably shouldn't have children. I know there's a long list of reasons, but there's a restaurant in New York City that is – what the hell?
It's his Instagram?
What is that?
That family and faith.
This is Trump.
All right, I'll listen.
Of our society.
This is riveting.
You've heard me say it before on the campaign trail, and I'll say it again tonight. In America, we don't worship government. We worship God.
That's it. The tweet directed to his Instagram was just he clipped himself saying that some sort of speech he gave. I don't know what's crawled up his ass, but it's awesome.
You could argue the whole separation of church and state, too. Like, I hate when people say, like, I know I'm going to sound like an atheist schmuck here, but, like, God bless America. It's like, that has always been a turnoff for me. It's like, just leave that shit out of whatever your policy is and your religion and all that crap. Just leave it out. I'm not saying you got to take off In God We Trust on the dollar bills. I'm not that crazy, but it's just like every time I see that stuff, it's just like it's a turnoff to me. And there's supposed to be separation of church and state. Your religion isn't supposed to matter. We're banning mostly Muslim people from coming into the country. And it's just like all this shit is so, like, anti-American and anti-freedom of speech and anti-freedom of religion and all that. It's just, it's a turnoff to me. And it's like, I knew Trump was Trump before he even got elected and he was a douchebag. And it's just like, it keeps coming up and doesn't get any better. And it's frustrating. Even the thing with like the Boy Scouts, it's like, why are you talking about sex and whatever else? And like,
what else are you talking
you're basically
about
getting them to, but on top of it, he's like getting the boo Obama. It's like, it was like Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather, like fuck the Obamas. Like that's what basically Trump's speech was to these like 12, 13 year old Boy Scouts. It's just like, what are you doing? Can you just be normal in any situation? The guy just can't be a normal human being. No, he's not capable of it.
That's what's great about Trump is that he's the most authentic man we've had in the White House in forever. Because he is always Donald Trump. Like when Barack Obama would do things, you knew that he put on a show here and there. Like, I'm sure that Barack Obama was bored going to some of this shit, and you'd probably have to fake the smile, like any normal person. Donald Trump only does things he wants to do, and then he makes them about himself. He's always on. And this is why, like, any talk about conspiracy.
That's not attractive.
I'm not saying it's attractive.
It's so, like, unattractive to me. It's just like.
But it's who he is.
It'd be great if he was a good person and was genuine.
Well,
do you know what I mean?
That's true,
like, I don't think he should be applauded. He should be applauded for being a dick who's genuine. Like, that's not a good quality.
Ah, I'll take it. In an era where nobody's...
It's entertaining. It's entertaining. Like, I follow him on Twitter and I laugh at his bullshit. But at the same time, it's like, you shouldn't be running the free world.
No, he is, though. And I love it. Sure. It's just entertainment for me. Every day I wake up, I bring my iPad with me as I do, I take a shit, and I always click Drudge Report. And every single time, a part of me thinks, all right, here we go. What's it going to be now? What's happening? And usually if I wake up and my phone hasn't blown up overnight, it's a sign that nothing too big has happened. But we do live in this state of just this perpetual, I don't want to say fear, but apprehension of, okay, what's today going to bring? And yet it always fades away and always goes away. And then we get trannies in the military. I didn't see that coming. I didn't see that one coming at all. I don't know where he pulled trannies in the military from, but it is awesome. Like, that just came out of nowhere. It's like, oh, we're going to go that one. All right, let's do it. Come on, Trump. What else you got for me? I'm guessing, what's going to be? He's going to do something with abortion probably in the next couple of months. He's got to hit all of them. I mean, it's only been 6 months. This man's done more than anybody. It's fantastic.
Well, he hasn't fulfilled his campaign promise of punishing women who get abortions. So
he'd
hopefully
have to
that'll
make abortion illegal first. Then you can punish them.
Unbelievable. Speaking of unbelievable,
like that's unbelievable. The man wants a transparent wall with solar panels on top of it. Like, he's fucking just inventing new shit for this wall of Mexico, and they're just more and more absurd. It's like a 5-year-old child, like, and then we're gonna put flames on the side of it. That'll be really cool. And you can see through it too. Yeah. It'll be a glass and you can like taunt somebody. And you gotta make sure it's high so that nobody can throw drugs over, and when they land on you, that hurts. Gotta stop that from happening. It's fantastic. This man runs our country. Which is all the more proof of why you shouldn't let the government run your life, people.
Yes. Anyway, there's a restaurant in New York City that has created a policy where they're limiting parents dining with kids to one drink. To me, another discriminatory practice that I'm not a huge fan of for a couple reasons.
The alcoholics of America are going to reunite on this one.
Well, not even so much that, but why? If somebody else at that very restaurant could have 5 drinks, leave their shit faced, and crash into somebody, why not just limit it one drink to everybody who comes in there? Why would it be just people who have kids in their car? Granted, you want kids to get home safe, but you should want everyone to get home safe. Like, it's a bizarre policy, and it's getting this restaurant a lot of pub. It's on Today. It's on all these websites. So they're getting some pub, and some people like support it and like it, and they're like, oh, that's a good idea. but you never even know who's going to drive the car. Mom could say, I'm driving, and has one drink, but dad decides, I'm fine. I'm going to drive with the five martinis in me. It's like, you can't police that shit. It's like, you either don't overserve, people, or you do. Those are the options, and hopefully once somebody's got a buzz, you stop serving them so they do get home okay. Like, at our restaurants, like, even if you live across the street, we're not going to let you get wrecked and walk out into traffic across the street. Like, you can't, it's too risky, and it's not on an ethical level the right thing to do to somebody either, let them get in that condition and take off. But I just saw that story. We were talking about at the restaurant yesterday. And to me, it's just discriminatory against one parent in this party who's in this restaurant. It's bizarre.
Yeah, I guess it's one of those things where obviously you have a completely different perspective being both a parent and a restaurateur. I mean, I hear it and I go, I think it's dumb. It's an odd moralistic policing. I wouldn't do it. Obviously, it's their business. They can do what they want. I do think that it comes from a good place. Let's face it, people that have children are dumber than us regular people. You've undertaken a burden that will weigh you down for the rest of your life, so your decision-making skills aren't very good. Maybe you do need to be told you can't have two. I don't know. Maybe that's where it comes from, or they're really just...
I feel like your drinking needs to be more police than mine.
Yeah, but you've already shown a propensity for really bad decisions, twice at least.
I say, you've got quite the track record.
I know, and that shows how bad your decisions are. And those are two major screw-ups. Mine don't follow me around for decades. So I think it's really just a very intelligent and subtle maneuver by this restaurant to just not have kids in the restaurant. They probably can't ban kids, can you?
Yeah, you can. Well, it depends on the place. It's like if you're ultra fine dining, you know, we've talked about Alinea, which is in Chicago, places like that. You're not going to bring a kid anyway. But
are you prohibited some places from it?
I think there are some restaurants that have rules against bringing kids in.
Awesome.
Yeah,
I want to go there.
You can refuse service to anybody.
Well, except for gays, blacks, women, minorities, people of an ethnic origin, anybody.
You can't do it. Right, based on that, but I think you can. I don't know legally what you can ban somebody for
if you can't ban them for any of the reasons people would ever ban somebody.
Being a kid, I guess.
That's what it's like. Being a kid or being crazy is the only reason you're allowed to not serve someone anymore. Damn it.
Well, wouldn't it be similar? It could be the same thing for like a concert or something where you'd have to be 21. You could say that at a restaurant, right?
At
a concert, so venues get away with doing it.
Yeah, that's because of the presence of alcohol.
Most restaurants have alcohol.
That's the thing. Yeah, I mean, I guess they could say, 21 and older, up only. That's a good restaurant.
Yeah. It could be. That was another thing. I actually did a post on Facebook for the restaurant just to get some talk going, and it was about a restaurant that was banning kids. And people took it like we were going to ban kids because they didn't read it, of course. And so then we had to, like, write people and be like, no, we're not banning kids. It was just a story that we were reposting. Anyway, that's what goes on when I'm not doing this. I want to do a new game with you. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. The question is, did this happen on Cape Cod or did it happen in Chicago?
Oh, okay.
All right.
If it's a murder, it happened in Chicago.
All right. This was not a murder. Police arrested a woman after she allegedly tried to crash her vehicle into another driver's vehicle and attack the other driver with a knife. Basically, at a traffic signal, a driver got out of the car waving a double-edged dagger out of the vehicle's window. She then exited the vehicle, took her clothing off, and ran bare-chested toward the caller's car while still flailing the dagger. At this point, the caller drove away and called the police.
Cape Cod.
You're going Cape Cod?
Yeah.
It's Cape Cod. Yeah. Why did you say Cape Cod?
Because I didn't hear anything about this, and I would have heard about a half-naked person trying to stab someone.
Would that make news in Chicago?
Yeah, the naked part would have bumped it up to newsworthy.
I I'm like 2 degrees of separation from this person, mind you.
Better.
But, like, what the hell? Like, she was, like, it sounds like she got cut off or something, and she had a double-edged knife that she started waving out the window, got out of her car, took her shirt off, and then started running at the other person's car, and the other person just drove away, of course. But, yeah. Like, how fucked up do you have to be? Like, she was obviously on something, some sort of drug or weird booze. I don't even know what that would entail. I've been drunk a few times, and I've never tried to take my shirt off and stab a moving car.
I've been drunk enough to take my clothes off, and I'd probably be drunk enough to challenge a car to a fight. But something about it being a woman also makes me feel like there's more to it. Like, that's a very dude thing to do. Like, I'm going to take my shirt off and challenge you or whatever. Like, women don't tend to be the, I'm going to rip my clothes off and this will make me seem more fearsome.
This woman was also arrested in April after she smashed a glass window at a small market, broke in, and stole chicken salad and lasagna.
Same woman?
Yes.
So she's got a, was she closed for that one?
I don't have the information on that. I believe she was.
I'm wondering if there's any kind
like
of...
If you broke into like a deli or a market, wouldn't you like go for the money as opposed to the chicken salad and lasagna?
It depends on how hungry I was. I mean, one of them's a
you
real
crime.
You
can take money and buy it. Yeah, it's bizarre.
I feel like if you go before a judge, like, Your Honor, I stole thousands of dollars. You're going to jail. Your Honor, I stole some chicken salad. Oh, well, okay. You get some community service.
Maybe. Anyway, that was a good story on Cape Cod this past week. What else do we have? Justin Bieber has canceled the final tour dates of his big tour he's been on due to unforeseen circumstances. He had 15 more stadium shows this year that would have raked him in over $50 million. He has canceled the shows because he needs to get more rest and relaxation.
So he overdosed. That's seriously like every single celebrity that has like exhaustion or needs to rest, like, you giving up $50 million? Yeah, you overdosed. You got something wrong with you that way, or AIDS or something. But I mean,
he sent out a message to his fans. He says, "I love you guys. I think you guys are awesome. Sorry for anybody who feels disappointed or betrayed. It's not my heart or anything."
He betrayed us. He played on our fears. Damn you, Justin Bieber.
What's the heart comment even mean?
I don't know. I mean, I wonder if he means it's not my heart as in, like, I still have the passion for this, or if there had been some rumor that his heart blew up or something.
I don't know. I hadn't heard that.
Exploding heart is a serious challenge for artists these days.
I mean, the only reason I bring this up was because last week we talked about Bieber having the two most streamed songs in the history of Earth ever. So that's why I bring him up again, because he was in the news again.
I need to know what's happening in Justin Bieber's world. Like, if
something's a big deal.
If something's wrong there, I got to know what's going on with the Biebs. If he gets hurt, I got to prepare myself.
I know we consider Trump the most famous guy in the world, but if you're 20 and under, it's probably Bieber. Last week, I guess he was banned from performing in China for bad behavior.
Yeah.
The Beijing Municipal Bureau of Culture said his series of misbehaviors while living abroad and during his performances in China has caused public resentment. To regulate the domestic entertainment market and purify its environment, we find it inappropriate to bring in performers with bad behaviors.
Yeah, when you're
China, there's a lot of, like, we're bitching about Trump, like, banning trannies, which I think we both don't think really makes a lot of sense. I'm speaking for you here, obviously, but, like, China, like, Justin Bieber can't perform because, like, he, like, air humps on stage or whatever it is he does, they find inappropriate. Like, at least we're not at that level.
Jesus Christ.
Chechnya, you know?
I mean, China's like 1950s America, getting upset at Elvis. Except this is a less talented Elvis.
Depends who you ask, I guess.
No, I think everybody with half a brain, which exclude teenage girls, would agree. He's a less talented Elvis.
Yeah, they both seem to like to do drugs.
And young women.
Did you see it? Did you see there's an aggressive squirrel on the loose in Manhattan and it's attacked five people?
Aggressive or rabid? That sounds like a rabid squirrel.
Well, he's been termed aggressive is the term they've been
just
using.
Shoot it.
There's multiple, it's small, and I don't know if there's people running around with guns in Central Park who are going to shoot this squirrel. Sounds a little dangerous to pull out a gun and try and shoot a squirrel, but not really familiar with guns.
That's loser talk. That's how losers make excuse. Oh, I don't want to take a chance hurting somebody, so I'm just going to let the squirrel do what it wants. And that's why the squirrel is attacking people in Manhattan, because nobody has the courage to stop him.
Well, my other question was, how do they know it's the same squirrel every time?
Well,
there's probably thousands. There's probably thousands of squirrels running around New York, right? How do you know?
He's the squirrel with the one arm. That's how they know.
I feel like he's being unfairly attacked, this terrorist squirrel.
We do have an anti-squirrel problem in America. Squirrel phobia is on the rise. It's really disgusting.
It could be.
I bet you, I have a feeling that next couple, I'd say the next 6 to 8 months, we're going to see fewer squirrels running around in public.
Mm. Did you see Westworld has been renewed for a second season?
I did, yes.
You must be excited for that.
Yes, I am. Incredible.
Okay. It looks like it'll be out in 2018.
Yeah, that sucks.
They won't have it done and ready to go this year, but it will be back. It looks like it's going to be a 10-episode season. You watched it the first season how many times?
Well, I bet I'm at least half a dozen.
You watched an entire season of a show a half dozen times?
At least. I watched that thing every night. It was awful. There's something really wrong with me.
Yeah, like, my wife and I got like halfway through the first season and never went back. I just never really got hooked on it, but that's just me.
I like cowboys, and I like questions of sentience, so it's perfect for me.
Who doesn't? All right. Obviously, if you've got the wedding this weekend, you got to work on your speech. I know you don't care about it, but it is your brother's wedding. It might be important to him.
That's why I'm going to behave. I'm just going to behave. I'm writing things down. I'm going to give a very boring speech. I'm taking out all the jokes. Because I know how I am. It's going to be very boring. It's going to be like 5 minutes in and out. All right, everybody, let's toast them. And then I put it down. I'm going to start getting hammered after that.
That'll be great for everyone involved, I'm sure.
I'm sure they've planned for it. I'm sure there's a mic plan in place.
Is it like one of those where there's a head table, you'll be sitting at the head table next to your brother and have to stand up and give the speech and everyone stares at you?
I will. There is a head table. When I got married, there was like a super head table for just the two of us. But I'll be at the bridal party.
I think they call that a sweetheart table. I like that you call it a super head table.
I don't know the shit. I like super head tables.
Awesome.
But I'll be at the head table. And I have to I thought I got to stand up and like walk around like the dance floor and like hold court like I'm a pro wrestler or something.
Oh, work the room.
Yeah, I'm gonna do some crowd work.
Could do that.
So anybody here from Virginia? Really? Yeah, it's made for lovers, huh? You guys loving this wedding? Yeah. Anybody here from New York? In Big Apple? Anybody? Oh, sir, what do you do for a living? And I guess do some work that way. They would just fucking. I want to see if I can get pulled. Maybe they start flashing the light at me. Huh. By the way, everybody, that's my time. You've been a great crowd. And my name's Mike Offen. We'll be here all week.
Yeah, or you could just, like, roast the people in the audience, too. That would be good.
I thought about it.
What happened to you, buddy? You know? That would also be entertaining. You should definitely yell at people if they talk during the speech. Always a good move.
Yeah, find some fat guy and be like, is it kind of weird to you that you've seen two people get married more recently than you've seen your toes? Like, what's going on there, pal? Hey, I don't come to where you're where you're giving a speech and knock the salami out of your hand, pal. I'm working here.
Yeah.
This is why I have to write things out and only read it and not improvise.
Yeah, no, I agree. Don't screw this one up. It's important to some people.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else going on?
Nope.
All right. I think we can call it a day here. This is actually nice. I like this daytime show. You sound slightly more coherent than normal. I think I sound more awake than normal. So this will probably never happen again, but it was good timing for both of us. So hopefully this was a decent show, and we will be back next week. Same place, same time, halfguarded.com. Check us out, halfguarded on Twitter, iTunes, Google Play, all that good stuff. Thanks for listening.
Aggressively, we all defend the role we play. Regrettably, times condescend you on your way. We've seen it all, bonfires of trust, flash floods of pain. It doesn't really matter, don't you worry, it'll all work out. No, it doesn't even matter, don't you worry, that ain't what it's all about.
We hope you enjoy your stay. It's good to have you with us, even if it's just for the day. We hope you enjoy your stay. Outside the sun is shining, seems like heaven ain't far away. It's good to have you with us.
Hi everyone, I'm Mike Coughlin for HalfGuarded.com. If anybody's actually listening to this part, I'll be surprised. But I realized, as a practicing attorney, I should probably mention somewhere, like they do in the movies, the motion pictures, that everything you've heard is exclusive copyright and trademark and every other legal designation permitted within the United States or any other grid country. HalfGuarded.com owns everything you just heard. Nobody else does. If they stole it from us, I will find you, and I will kill you, because I have a special set of skills. Also, anybody that's listening to this, email mike@halfguarded.com. I've never really used email, but I can get shit from it. If you've actually heard this, I'm not kidding, I will send you $5 via PayPal. I'm really curious to see if anybody in the world will ever fucking hear this. $5 for somebody. I'll probably do it for everybody that listens, unless it gets out of control, then I'll just delete this part. But until that time comes, everything you heard is property of the halfguarded.com website. Bye. Oh, and yes, I'm aware that putting in a copyright thing at the end of a podcast where I've probably stolen music from somebody else is weird, but I promise to pay those artists if they ever request it. HalfGuarded.com. Go!